Here we go.
What a beautiful song. I love it. Every time I hear it.
Isn't that great? Yeah, I like to use that. It's great that we can use that as our intro here and there. It's great to be able to use. I love it. But what a great arrangement. And those voices are fabulous. Hey, folks, welcome aboard. My name is Andy Kimball. We have Amanda Love in the UK. I'm here in the USA. And this is the Andy and Amanda show that you've joined. And to get on board and join our conversation, all you got to do is pick up your phone and dial 515-605-9888. And to get in touch with the show, just drop us an email at andyandamandashow@gmail.com. Let us know what's on your mind. And if you want to join the show, if you're international, and our audience internationally is growing like crazy, our numbers all around the world are really beginning to gain some leverage here. And if you want to join us from another country outside the United States or North America, simply drop us an email again at andyandamandashow@gmail.com, and we'll send you a link that all you do is click it, and we can get you on that way. But you do need a microphone and headset or something so we can hear you and you can talk back to us. So anyway, and also, I keep forgetting to mention this, we have a chat. We have text chat live when we're on live. And you go to the blocktalkradio.com/AndyandAmandaShow. And you can join us, and you'll see a text screen that enables you to correspond with us over by texting. We could, maybe we'll ignore you, depending what you have to say. But, hey, you can try it. We might even ignore your calls. But, try to get on,
Yeah, it'd be lovely to interact with you guys. Seriously, come join the show. Be part of it.
Join the conversation, folks. What's on your mind? Tell us a couple of jokes, or what's concerning you these days, or not, or what's going on in your life, and we don't. There's nothing we don't talk about on the show. Everything from A to Z. You name it, we talk about it. Yes.
Absolutely. So how are you, dear? How are you, Mr. Kimball?
I'm doing pretty darn fine, thank you. I really am enjoying life here in Southern California, and doing fine, and doing some more music, writing some more tunes, and slowly but surely looking to get this new record out. We'll see what happens and when it happens, but I've been saying that for a long time, but I've got a bunch of recorded ideas, and that are some are really good. Some of the tunes, some are better than others, but some of the ones that are really good. I mean, you like to, if I like the song, then that means something to me. If I like, wow,
you've got to like your own music for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. And if you feel really strongly about it, then.
Yeah. Sometimes I hear some of these, if I'm either on the road or somewhere and I'm in a hotel or at home, wherever. And I'm picking up I get my guitar out and I play a few lines and I'm like, yeah, this is good. I'm just fooling around, And I pick up my cell phone and put on a recorder and label it new song idea. You should see how many new song ideas I have on my phone that never go anywhere.
Oh, I can so relate. Seriously. I've got like a little log of, it's more than a little log. I have to clear it because, of course, it takes up like the whole voice recording thing can take quite a hefty amount on your phone if you leave it to build up, which I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my goodness. I got to do something with this. This is ridiculous,
Yeah, it gets crazy, doesn't it? It does, and I've had even people, I put notes on Facebook a while back or wherever, social media, I don't know, a couple things, and put some guitar music, like guitar songs out there and say, hey, folks, here's an opportunity for you to participate in the writing of an Andy Kimball song that'll be recorded and you'll get the credit for it. Give me the lyrics and blah, blah, blah. And I got a whole bunch of submissions from people and even some fans that have seen my shows and fans back in Philadelphia, my whole stomping ground and, hometown. And I've got a lot of lyrics, and some of them are rather good, But the issue I found was that if it doesn't come out of my soul and my heart, I can't climb into it. Somebody's lyrics, and I try to make them work in my song, and they do work, and they fit, and I can make it work. But it's not me. It doesn't come out of me. I can't, and if I can't climb into a tune and own it, I can't do it. I just can't do it, So,
I
mean?
Completely.
It's all from the soul. It's all about the soul and about the music and putting the two together. Bam, you got to get out there and making that connection and creating that drive and creating that feel and making it work, And it all kind of comes together at once. And if it's, And I guess that's why, you know, thinking about it, I think my own compositions are so far and few between. And I envy songwriters. I can just sit down with a pad and just bam and blast out these tunes and make things happen. Oh. And I just can't do that. I never was able to do it.
That's the thing, though, sweetheart, isn't it? That, you know, we all have, each artist has his own process of creating a track, you know. And I'm sure you've had this, because I've had people approach me before and say, how the hell do you write a song? I'm like, okay, I'll tell you how I do it. But for me, it's usually either, and it kind of rotates from either being lyrics first and then the music, or music and then the lyrics. Or if I'm very lucky, I get both at the same time, which I went through a stage of having that for a great period of time. I was like, my goodness, this is incredible. And then it kind of changed. I was like, what's going on? What's going wrong?
And you've had, you know, yeah. We played some of your tunes on the show. You have some great compositions. I mean, when you do a tune, they're really, really good. I mean, you're singing and your compositions and, you know, you compose them. It's not just you playing piano. You've got all these things going on, these you know, synthesizer things and background and melodies, and your vocals comes on top, but it's done so well. And
thank you, darling. I'll reward you later for that one.
Ooh, now we're talking. Yeah, you know, now we're talking.
It was really hard.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, no. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I get what you're saying. But surely you've had people approach you and ask you how you do your music and how you do songs and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I tell people, and I've heard some other artists do this as well. And, you know, what I typically will do is pick up the guitar and just, you know, I just kind of create some space. And sometimes I've got guitars all over my place. It looks like a guitar store. And I'll pick up a guitar and fool around. And usually the guitar, it's hard to make sense of this, but a guitar asks me, or actually tells me, not asks me, tells me what we need to do together right now. Here's, you know, it's almost like this communication. And I know it's, you know, pieces of wood and strings, you know, but there's definitely a bond. There's definitely, and it comes out of my mind. I know that obviously guitars don't talk, but they do talk. You know what I mean?
They
do. And you feel it. You feel the guitar. You feel it up next to your body, and you put your finger on the guitar neck. You form some shapes, and it begins to speak to me as to where we're going together. Where are we going with this? You know, the guitar and I together. You know, where are we both traveling to right now? You know, back in time, in a future time, in an emotional state of being. What are we doing here? And a couple of these guitar licks, and some of them are, you know, some are things I've never done, or improvisations of things I have done and new ways of doing them, finding new notes, new things, new whatever progressions, and they become a song. What I'll typically do is come up with some words that don't make much sense at the time, but I'm able to determine where do the rhymes come in, where do the breaks come in, where do the, you know, where does it go. And if you begin to write a tune, and the words might not make perfect sense as you're first scratching out these lines that are consistent with what the guitar is doing, and you get halfway through the tune, and you look back, and then it begins to make sense. You might make a little tweaks and things here and there, you know, but then so the songs I write, I have no idea what they're about till I'm halfway through them or more, you know, more than halfway through them, you know.
Yes. There's been moments like that for me too, where I've just started writing and it's kind of flowing. It's kind of making sense. But then I've got halfway through a track, the song, and it's written. Mm-hmm. And I'm reading it through and I'm like, oh, okay, so this is what wanted to come out. And sometimes I can write a complete song and then the meaning will hit me like weeks or months later. And I'm thinking, that has some relevance in my life right now. So I find that what I write is usually has something from me that I'm experiencing or going through subconsciously that I'm not necessarily consciously aware of. I can also consciously write something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I can imagine a situation like somebody's, I don't know, going through a divorce or a breakup or whatever, because that's usually typical songs. And I can imagine what that feels like for me and then write about it like a story. I've always been very gifted to be able to do that, place myself in any situation and write about it. But quite often, 90% of the time, my songs are usually representing something I'm currently going through that I haven't been aware of yet, or I have been aware of, and, you know, it just falls out. It's absolutely incredible.
You know what I find, too, is a lot of songs are about breakups, a lot about breakups or love relationships.
Oh, so many.
If Taylor Swift writes one more song about her relationship and breaking up, I'm a putz.
I know. Okay.
Can we talk? You know what I mean?
Yes.
But I think what makes her songs is not so much the lyrics, but how is the compositions of the tunes, you know? Because all the lyrics, one way or another, they're all kind of about the same thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it is, just in a different way, isn't it? That's like, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not a Taylor Swift expert or a big fan. Or, I mean, I don't know. I she's good. Just I don't tune into pop music, so I don't really know. But so I'm speaking just off the cuff here. But you know, but what I find is that many, many songs are about love relationships or just relationships gone south, you know, going being attracted to this person and where that could go, you know, and they all seem to be, so many songs seem to be about that same message and that same thing. I tend to be just a happy guy, and I just who I am. I just could sit outside and look at the sky and be very, very happy, just loving life, loving every breath I take, loving the experience of the world, loving to make a difference in the lives of other people. And I could be walking down the street and saying, life is good, I'm happy today.
It's true.
I could sit down and write a song that says, yeah, I just can't see, well, you know, sit down, taking a tablet out, writing a song that goes, I'm so happy, I'm so happy. Yeah, this is an idea, you know. Listen, you know.
Yeah,
that's already been done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what am I going to say? And I can't write about this. I mean, am I in like a relationship perfect for me? And no, the issues to work out here and there. But yeah, you know, except with yours, of course. You know, which is, you know, that's pretty perfect. But So I don't have a whole lot to say. If you have anything to say, you know, I just don't have a lot to say. Isn't that strange coming from me?
Yeah.
Andy, why don't you just go through some of your shows and take some of your commentary, and here's your song.
Okay, so if that's the case, if you're like really, which you are, a happy person, like I said, you remind me of a cartoon character. It's like you do. It's like a happy world, happy land that you live in. It's awesome. But if you then struggle to find something to write about, how do you find a way to write a song for you? Do you just pick a subject and just go for it, or
no? The subjects come out. Like I've got this song which hasn't been studio recorded yet. That's getting a lot. It's through the years. It got a lot of attention. Maybe I'll play it on the show. I don't know if I can get it to play today. Maybe I'll figure that out. It's called Some Like the Rain. It's Andy Kimball, and there's several versions of it floating around, mostly from live concerts or studio performances, never done inside this, you know, sit-down recording studio. Here's the record. Here's the song. And here's how the song came about. I got finished a tour. This is back in mid to late 90s. And I landed back in the crash pad in New York. And Sue, who's my wife and my girlfriend at the time, reminded me that I had a radio interview scheduled on WBAI in New York that night. Or wait, what am I thinking? Was it Philadelphia and WXPN that night? It's one of those two stations, both NPR, you know, radio stations. And I don't remember if this is New York or Philly off the top of my head. I have to think about it. But anyway, the point being, I had a radio interview. And I just got finished from a tour, a lot of dates, a lot of guitar, you know, a lot of bam, 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 just a lot. And it was raining, you know, got back to New York City, driving down the one of the freeways there and made my way into Manhattan, a place to park, you know, carrying my guitars up the, you know, so walk up four flights up flat, get there, ready to crash, bam. And I get reminded, oh, you got a radio interview. Remember you promised whatever, I forget. It may have been Gene Shea on WXPN in Philadelphia. Anyway, you have a radio interview. And I'm like, oh, man. It was New York. So I remember driving in Manhattan. It was New York. So, God. Anyway, so I'm like, oh, man, I just wanted to cancel. She says, no, you got to do this, man. Go ahead and do it. You know, bam, bam, bam. You have a new record come out. You got to go do promote it and all this shit. I'm like, oh, my God. So get in the car and drive back, you know, from the Upper West Side down to the Lower West Side or Midtown Manhattan in my car. It's raining out pretty good, you know, like a pretty steady, not a heavy rain, but a pretty steady drizzle.
Yeah.
And yeah. I just didn't feel like doing it. I was ready to crash on the couch, put on the TV, just hang out, you know, to kick my shoes off and hang out, you know. And
yeah.
That's what I really wanted to do, you know. Like if there's a fireplace, I'd like to – I think there was a fireplace. Anyway, that's all I wanted to do. Light the fire and stay home. So there I'm in my car with my guitar and not wanting to go to work again. You know, I'm done. And the windshield wipers are on. And I'm watching the windshield wipers go back and forth. Bam, 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 bam. And I said to myself, there's a song there. There's a song there. And this, then I thought, you know, some people like the sunshine and some people actually enjoy the rain. Some like the rain.
Oh, I love both. Seriously.
Right. And the word and the line was, some like sunshine, some just like the rain. And then a whole song, like, bam, like boom,
yeah.
just flushed into my body. It overbecame my body. The whole song, everything, the entire song, from soup to nuts. Boom, just like that. Like, boom. And I physically felt it. I felt the whole tune in the car,
yeah.
driving, right? I knew how I was going to play it. I knew what shapes I was going to use in the guitar. I knew where the verses were, what the chorus is, the whole, everything. Bam!
Wow!
Like it was a song angel or wizard that just waved the magic wand and boom!
Yeah.
Here you go, Andy. Here's a song you need it. Here it is. And so I got in the studio, and I'm waiting because there, you know, there's somebody else, there's another guest or whatever, and then they play a couple songs and my turn to come on live. And boom, I come in. Andy Kimball's back with this. Andy, man, you know, live show, you know. And it's a, you know, pretty strong, powerful NPR New York station. And we talked, you know, welcome back. Just go back from your tour. We talked about the guitar, about touring a little bit. Why don't you start us off with a song? And I play a song, you know, one of the tunes, one of my blues tunes that are kind of a signature song. Oh, man, that great good guitar work, We talked some more about some of the guitar work. Why don't you do another one for us? I said, okay, this is a new one. this is a new song. And I played some like the rain for the very, very, very first time, having never played it, never done it even on my own, in my head, in the car, played it for the first time on New York radio. And he was like, wow. And I didn't say much. I just said, yeah, thank you. It's a new tune. Thank you. You know, didn't know we talked. I did total three songs, did another one, and bam. And when we got off the air, you know, he's playing a tune, and we talked a little bit off the air. He says, Andy, that new tune was great. What's it called? And I said, what's it called? Something like the rain. And I said, you have no idea how new that song was. He said, well, it was great. Loved it. If it's not recorded yet, go record it. That's a great song. And I've to this date, and this is 20-some years later or whatever, and I've never recording studio to record the in-stone version of that song.
Andy.
And it's called Some Like the Rain. And I got to be honest with you, it's a good song.
Hmm.
It's a real good song. And
yeah.
So let's fast forward a few years later, okay? Now I'm playing a folk festival in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, main stage, Saturday afternoon, main stage, Andy Kimball, boom. I do what I do, and the MC, who is actually one of the producers of the famed Philadelphia Folk Festival, after I'm finished, bam, you know, he says, Andy Kimball, and he says, Andy, I've got a message from you, from Gene Shea, and Gene Shea is the folk guru. This is a guy who brought Bob Dylan to Philadelphia, Joan Baez to Philadelphia, made so many folk careers in the business. So many people who have gone around, you know, since made international names for themselves. And Gene Shea hosted a show called The Folk Show in Philadelphia with Gene Shea, very well-known folk personality. And I thank him for being a very strong force in my career out of the gate as well. So So here I'm finishing my set on the stage, and the host says, we have an invite from you, Andy, if you care to do it. Gene Shea is back in a pavilion or a tent, whatever, doing a songwriter's workshop, and the message he gave me to give you was to please join him in the presentation of this workshop. And I said, wow, folks, should I do it? And the whole audience back there, yay, whoa, yeah, get back there, you know, do it. It's okay. Whoever else, get back there. And, of course, the place, you know, it was really cool. It was really cool how many people joined. So I walk into the room, the big tent where Gene Chay is presenting this, and he says, Andy Kimball, thanks for joining us. Da-da-da. He says, you're just in time because the discussion is, have you ever written a song, maybe even recorded it? And as you evolve as a songwriter and performer, that song that you did begins to change and manifest into something else. And I play every time I play a show, I do songs differently every single time. That's what I do. I never play the song twice the same way because I just make it up on stage as I go along. I have no, you know, right?
That's so cool.
So I said, this is totally off the fly. I said, now that you think about it, and let me think of a song here. And then somebody, so I played Some Like the Rain, and somebody said, hey, how about Some Like the Rain? And I said, sure, let's see how we can change that song, keep the integrity and the emotion of the song the same, but change the presentation of it and thereby change how it lands. Like, you think
right.
I know what I'm talking about? I don't. So,
okay, all right.
So I go from a song which is an E, and I take the E, I make it a drop D, and change the song totally, and it went over really well. And people who heard me do both versions say, wow. And then I went for a period of a couple of years playing the song with that new drop D way of playing it. Totally changed it, right?
Yeah.
And this past year, I changed it back. I said, yeah, okay, I want to go back to playing it the way it was written.
Okay.
So this is the question, and I do that now. And then when I perform it now on my current shows, it's how it was pretty much, you know, I change it here and there, but pretty much how I originally wrote it, how I originally did it on the radio that first time. And so the question becomes for songwriters out there, and it's kind of cool how this show is becoming about songwriting and music. That's kind of cool because we never know.
No,
but,
it's true.
But isn't it cool to be able to dive into a song, either whether it be your song or maybe even another singer-songwriter's tune, and you begin to play that song and play it and express it how it means something to you, and thereby, you know, not the person who wrote it, what it meant to them when they recorded it, but what's it mean to you when you're performing it, and change it accordingly to what it means to you, and thereby changing how it does land to your audience.
Yeah.
And be able to do that on stage on the fly. Just
that's
go up there and boom.
A form of remixing in a sense, because you are just changing the whole energy of it by imprinting your own energy into somebody else's work.
Yeah.
And making it yours. Not
yeah.
to own and say, I own this song, but yours in the sense of, this is how it means to me, like you said.
Yeah,
and I think that's incredible to be able to do something like that.
And just when you compose, there's so many components into your music. There's so much going on. And so what you mostly do is you can't go out on stage and or correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't go out on stage and perform what you do. You compose what you do in the studio, right?
Yes, very much so. I'm not a performer. My passion has always been to get out what I feel in music because it's always been there. I've had this since I was about 5 years old, Andy, this ache in me to just write and express what I feel in song lyrics and music. And I went for a stage of having a block and real, no confidence in myself, because I believed I had to create for everybody else, not myself.
Right.
So I was trying to create stuff that I thought everybody else wanted to hear, and I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't do it. I didn't have the motivation or the right way to do that. And I was thinking, a label would never pick me up because this isn't good enough, and I'm not good enough, and blah, 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 blah. And then I got to a stage where I guess I was facing myself more and my abilities and what I really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like I said to you on previous shows, you sit there and you write it for you. Don't focus on anybody else. Express what you want and feel in that moment and let it come out. See how it is. See what it's about and just play with it. And it is the most, I think, rewarding experience when you do that, because you listen back and you go, oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, I really feel this. I'm thinking other people are going to connect with this. I did an instrumental track going back a good while ago called My Colors, and the song is half written. I can't finish the song, and I'm going to attempt to do it more so now and approach it again to finish it, because I wanted so much for this to be expressed because the feeling still lingers in me to do this. And I listened back to the track and I was like, yeah, this track's really good. And I uploaded it onto Facebook. I was thinking, okay, let's see what people think about this. And I left it there, left it, you know, on my newsfeed, whatever. And a friend commented and she got hold of me immediately. She said, Amanda. I was like, yes. She's like, I've just heard your song. You have no idea how I needed to hear that. I was like, well, huh, that's blown me away because it's just an instrumental. I said, go, please, you know, tell me more. She said, you know, I felt this, you know, I was in a bad place, but your music had so much energy and emotion and it's literally shifted everything I was feeling inside and it's literally lifted me up to a place that I couldn't even imagine to be at that point. Well, as you can imagine, I was absolutely buzzing because I was thinking, wow, that's how the song felt for me. But to have somebody else come back to you and say, hey, I feel it too, was just phenomenal. And so, yeah, I would really love to do something with it. And I think it would be great to do that. And so it's beautiful to know that that collection of sounds that you've created, that energy you poured into it, somebody else, and it moves them the same way it moves you. It's just, it's an incredible feeling, isn't it?
And you are really accomplished keyboard player. And I guess you to do what you do, you need to be able to play the piano, I guess. Am I right?
Well, there's a difference between playing a piano and a keyboard. I mean, they're fairly the same, similar structure. But because you've got more keys and variation on a piano, you have to learn to play a piano differently than you do a keyboard. And there's all sorts of other functions. Of course, you've got to learn with being on a keyboard as well. So I'm more of a keyboard player, yes. I've always wanted to play piano. I never got the opportunity to do it. I want to own a piano one day and just pour my heart into that and see what other creative extensions I can have by playing the piano and then using it on a keyboard when I'm creating my music in the lab, as they say, you know, and see what comes out. But I'm not as advanced as most people think, darling. I literally taught myself everything I know and just have fun doing it, you know, and seeing what I can create. If it takes me a little longer than some people because some people are more established than myself, that's okay. I'll keep trying. I'll keep learning. I'll keep picking up techniques that I'm finding online, or I could even go to somebody and say, hey, can you help me get better? So, you know, those possibilities are there. But I do what I can with what I got.
Yeah.
And yeah, I could put more effort in, definitely.
Well, you've got some great things going for you there. So musically,
you,
I mean, so you're really, really good compositions, and I want to. Where can our audience tune in hear your music? What would you recommend? Because I really want them to do that. I really do.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, the biggest and main platform is YouTube. I've got literally, guys, I've only got two songs that are floating there in the YouTube world. Under Amanda Love Music, and the quickest way to find the tracks is I've labeled them ALM for short for Amanda Love Music. So it's spelled like ALM and then dash and then the name of the song, which is This Love, and the other one is Highway to Heaven. They're the two main ones that
I love.
I
that we played that on the show.
I got loads in the works that I'm trying to finish amongst everything else. And I really want to get them out there in the world, too. So I shall keep everyone updated.
The YouTube, you just look under Amanda Love? Is that how you do it?
Amanda Love Music. But if they put in ALM for short, they should find the song straight away. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, take that down, folks, because we're Amanda, who's my co-host here on the – she's the Amanda of the Andy and Amanda show. Just to be straight, I'm not Amanda. She is.
Although we have questioned that because we do think alike quite often.
We are interchangeable for sure. but you need to check out her music because she's very talented and great composer and because she composes using synths and keyboards and there's so much going on in her music and she does such a great job. She can't get out and perform and tour and record like I take my guitars out and bang, you know. So the best way to find her music is just that. Go to YouTube, Amanda Love Music or ALM-music.
Yeah,
and check question about.
Facebook,
yeah.
And I've got Instagram, and obviously you can't really appreciate the music on there as much. Obviously, I share YouTube videos to Facebook, but they don't have their own mm-hmm. ability to do anything. So, yes, YouTube's always the best way to go, and just check out social media for any updates. But, yeah, so thank you for that plug-in. That's awesome.
It's well-deserved. Well-deserved.
Oh, bless you. And, yeah, guys, you need to, come on, check out Andy as well if you haven't done so already. I'd be surprised if you hadn't, because he's awesome. I've purchased a few of his songs myself.
Whoa. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
She's shocked that I picked her.
Yes.
Oh, quite often, darling. Quite often.
Hey, do you know, you weren't with us on our, what day would that have been? What's today?
Monday.
We had, Bob Kimmel on our show on Monday, who was the former director of NBC Radio News, and prior to that was at CBS Radio in Philadelphia, and had a sit down with Jimmy Hoffa, a lunch meeting with Jimmy Hoffa, and recorded it, and we played it on our show Monday. It was so cool. It was so much fun. It was a good one.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
He's
definitely
a legendary guy.
Cool. Oh, it was a cool show. So cool. And we talked about, as a news guy, he's retired from doing it. He's still involved with the local paper in New York, but he has, you know, it's his major news careers. He's retired, you know, semi-retired, I should say. But we did, as a you know, pretty formidable news person, what his take was on the January 6th attempted coup, you know, the insurrection, if it's ever going to land on Donald Trump's lap. Is this, I mean, there's so, you know, it's kind of like you circle around, you know, if you throw a marble in a spinning thing and the marble goes on the outside, then it goes closer and closer to the hole in the middle, you know, down the hole in the middle, you know, as this thing spins around, it slows. And the marble goes, and then down the drain, like water going down the toilet kind of thing, you know. They're circling around to me. It's circling. Eventually, you know, I think this thing has to land on Donald Trump's lap. You know, one problem for the Justice Department with everything that's coming out right now, and all these witnesses and videos and testimony, under oath, honest to God testimony from his own appointed and hired employees, his own aides, you know, people who work with him and for him and by his side. But it seems that a big problem, it seems to me anyway, for the Justice Department, is that it has to try to be everywhere all at once with all this stuff. You know, it's got to begin to kind of, you know, hone in on the enormous number of people in the mob, so to speak, that A, overran the Capitol, and B, who were giving him advice who weren't really qualified to, because those who he really hired, his own attorneys and his own aides, repeatedly told him that he lost the election. There's no evidence of everything he's saying. So where the prosecutors put most of their resources during, you know, I guess the Attorney General, Merrick Garland's first year in office, is, whoa, what a first year.
I know.
You know, the January 6th hearings have made clear that DOJ really has to simultaneously pursue the pressure campaign used to try to persuade Mike Pence, you know, to somehow don't do this, Mike.
Yeah.
Don't certify the elections. You know, put it off. Don't do it. And fake and put in fake electors, false fake electors. Scheme, implement them, and take their word for it that Trump won the election, not what the American people wanted, not what the American people voted for. And they also have to look into the militia members indicted for, you know, seditious conspiracy, you know, and that's huge. And then also the witness who ignored congressional subpoenas, they have to look at that.
Yeah.
They have to look at Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and others, Jeff, what's his name, Baker. You know, so many people, and they have to be so many places all at once.
Yeah.
You know, and the lawyers, supposed lawyers, now have been disbarred, who need to be held accountable for criminal behavior, like Rudy Giuliani,
right.
the once attorney, former mayor of New York, who cleaned up New York City. This guy, Republican, Democrat, well, he's Republican, but so well admired and so well respected for the job he did in New York and got in New York out of 9/11. I mean, this guy was riding high, and rightfully so, rightfully so.
Yes.
And what the hell happened to him? Power, close to, you know, being close to the president, I don't know. Man, and now he's disbarred. Now he ends his career in utter disgrace.
Yeah.
You know, what a shame. He should have gotten out of, you know, retired from being mayor and lived to, you know, gone into private practice and called it a day.
Yeah.
Written a book, you know, maybe written a book, you know, done a book tour, a book signing.
Why not? Yeah.
And this guy today would still be so high, you know, it doesn't matter what his political affiliation was. He would have been so highly regarded. You know, what a shame. What a shame. You know, but anyway. And now he gives, you know, his I'll never forget the press conference in front of the porn star shop where his hair dye was running down his face.
Porn star. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God. You know, the House committee, if we've been watching and listening to what's going on, they exposed the lawyer's misconduct to everybody who cared to tune in.
That's an appropriate place to be exposed, really, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, but it's become increasingly very obvious that the Justice Department was already focused on these bad actors who were operating close, hovering around the president and in direct contact with Trump at the time. The Justice Department is reportedly now pursuing whether, Sidney Powell, for example, was involved in funding the insurrection and has seized Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani's phones and raided his house and Jeffrey Clark's house and John Eastman. You know, they're honing in and raiding these folks at dawn hours. You know, these folks are coming out of their home in their pajamas. And you know something? The Justice Department doesn't raid people's personal residences and at dawn unless they know. They know they got something. You know, they know. You know, they just don't. They just don't.
It's very true.
Yeah.
It's getting thick and fast, isn't it? And I'm so eager to know where this is going. It's September, isn't it, that we're going to find some real kind of answers?
And also, I guess we've talked about it, that Jamie Raskin, the very outspoken congressman, who was involved in the congressional hearings and was also leading the impeachment number two regarding Trump's involvement, is coming on. Jamie Raskin, this is what I say, is coming on our show in September, and we look forward to a discussion with him. We might come on earlier, but we have a busy schedule coming up in August. We have some time off coming up here. I got Philadelphia Folk Fest and some other things happening in August, and I know Cornell's going to be traveling, who coordinates the show. So August is busy, and also a lot of people take vacations in August. And he's a major player in Congress and a major player in the January 6th investigative committee. And we want to have as many people tuning into the show as possible when he comes on board. So we're thinking September might be a good time for that. But that's going to be a great show.
True. And true honor to have him on the show. Absolutely. Very blessed.
And the show is going to be billed as a conversation with Jamie Raskin. So that'll be kind of cool. You know, it's not going to be question and answer. We will be taking phone calls. People will be able to call in and ask him questions. But the main thrust of his appearance on our show is going to be, you know, a typical Andy DeMandia show. I better not say typical. It will be a... Next thing you know, Dr. Ruth is going to be asking some questions. But anyway, we'll be, you know, in how we do things, let me put it that way, on our show, which is more, when we have special guests on, and we had many, is more of a discussion, a conversation, getting people involved, all about life, about what they do, about how they do it. And I look forward to that on our show. That'll be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. It's so exciting.
Isn't it, though? And you do remember... do you remember George Floyd, who was killed by a police officer?
Yes, very much so.
The other police officers who were involved, one was standing by, preventing people from interfering, and the other had his legs, put his weight on George Floyd's legs, where Chauvin had his knee in his neck. These two other officers were finally sentenced. So everybody involved in that was now going to jail. J. Alexander Koenig and Tao Thao, I think it's T-O-U-T-H-A-O. I'm not pronouncing it probably, so forgive me for that. But those are two former Minneapolis police officers who were convicted of federal charges in the fatal arrest of George Floyd were now sentenced to 3 years and 3.5 years, respectively, in prison. So,
wow.
So they're all now in jail. So, good.
Wow.
Good thing.
Yes. Good thing. Justice has been served.
Yes.
And I'm sure there are those out there who believe not quite. I'm sure they have different ideas of what the justice is for them in that situation.
Yeah.
But at least they did something or have done something about it. And
yeah.
It was such an awful and tragic situation.
In a way, and this has been brought up, I'm sure, you know, beyond our conversation, but in a way, I remember the officer standing by, I remember the guy standing by next to Floyd and not doing anything while Floyd is being murdered. But he was a junior, you know, and these two other officers who I just spoke of were junior to Derek Chauvin, who killed Floyd, and respected their senior officer. And I guess, you know, they're new cops for the most part. You know, so the line is, okay, they're new junior officers. He's really the boss guy here. We're subservient to him. But then the human element should kick in and say, whoa, I don't care if this guy's a senior cop to me or not. This poor dude's he's got his knee on this poor dude's neck. This guy can't breathe. Yo, dude, off. You know, forget the fact that you're a cop. Just be a person here for a minute. And listen to what everybody's saying around you. Listen to all the people who are videotaping this and scream, get off him. You know, he's killing him. I can't breathe. Anyway, so one part of me says, yeah, they got to go to jail. The other part of me says, they're officers, and I don't know how it works, but orders from your senior officers when you're on duty is, I don't really know how it works. I mean, they're going to jail because they failed as human beings.
Yes. That's very true. That's a great way of putting it, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
So that's all done. Everybody's going to jail. I mean, it's a shame it happened, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's over. I mean, it's not over. It will never be over. Discrimination will never be over. We are a racist society, no matter how many people deny it. But it will never be over.
Yeah. Of course, the other big thing that's being talked about at the moment is the rising COVID cases with the new variant and people being safe with that. And of course, the smallpox situation and the monkeypox. And I think it's... Right now, the chaos is just thick and fast, isn't it, in every direction?
It is.
I mean, we've had a lot going on in this world in my short time of being here. I'm not going to reveal my age because that make me feel better. but, you know, when I think about it and I think back to the past, I can't remember it being as bad as this all at once. Yes, we've had some real crazy things happen, sure. Mm-hmm. But the way everything is right now, it's like, I don't know about a lot of things. I don't know what to focus on. And I'm sure everybody feels the same. Somehow it just throws you off balance and you try to find the right things to keep you on balance, whether it's work, family, relationships, or whatever it may be, just to try and maintain, as they say. And I just think... My head could be in a spin if I actually stop and think about it too much, so I try not to. I try not to think about it. But it is great to be able to share on the show certain things. Yes,
it is. And again, folks, if you want to share, get on the show, like we're about to take join somebody here right now. Our number is 515-605-9888. And our friend and show coordinator from Delaware, Joe Biden's home state, is on board now. Cornell, is that you? You're on board here now?
Hey, man. I'm sick and tired of you guys talking about Trump and this. I'm sitting riding around in my goddamn car, drinking me a Dr. Doug, Corona beer, whatever, Corona beer, and y'all always Trump this, Trump that. I'm kind of got tired of it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You, Angie, and Amanda, and whoever it is, I'm sick and tired of you. I'm tired. I just want to enjoy my corn up here and just relax. But every time I get on this goddamn show, y'all always talking about goddamn show. Y'all just got this goddamn bullshit. You understand what I'm saying? If I come up to that goddamn radio station and do something to you motherfuckers, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because we down here, we love our fucking Trump, and Trump rules. You get me? You get me? You get me?
Yes!
What's up, guys?
God, what's up? Hey, my darling.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Too funny. You are too funny. That's too good.
I'm doing too great, good. Man. Get the hell. I was listening. I just wanted to come in, you know?
God. Too funny.
Oh,
you are too funny.
Well, I bet there are actually people who have that opinion, actually.
Yeah. Oh, there are. We've had them from time to time.
Yeah.
And you know what I wonder?
What's that?
I wonder this. Because we've had folks that, you know, during the presidential campaign and during the promotion of the big lie and blah, 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 and all this, we've had occasional callers, not too often, but we've had callers that come in who are more conservative, shall we say, and follow Trump and think that he won the election and live there. Far and few between now, more so a while back. But I wonder if because we tend more to speak, I mean, in reality, we do tend to call it the way it is. I mean, truth is the truth, and we say what is the truth and what is fact. And we have fun with the conspiracy stuff and the lie, and we have fun with all that, but we really are more, honed into the reality of what is going on in the world and what is going on in politics and the news. And I wonder, and because of that, we tend to be probably perceived as being more of a left leaning show.
Have no doubt that people feel that way. Yeah, of course.
If that is the case, then so be the case. Because, again, it's more of a commitment to the truth than it is to leaning left or right in politics.
Yeah. And let's face it, guys, I'm in the UK.
Yeah.
And I've never really, dedicated my time to following every single step of the way the politics there in the US. It's only been since being on this show that we've discussed it more, and it's opened my world more to politics and things like that. So, and people will know from my point of view, my genuine opinions come from just not feeling comfortable with Trump. It's nothing to do with one party or the other. It's literally about what one person can do and how they come across and how they present themselves as a human being. That's always been the case for me, So, I've changed parties here in the UK several times. I voted Labour in the past, Conservative, Liberal Democrats, you name it. So,
Amanda, on Monday, Cornell stepped in for you on Monday, and Cornell and I did a show together on Monday.
Fantastic.
And part of, I should find this and see if I can play it for you. We called Congressman from Florida, Matt Gaetz's office on Monday. Remember Cornell?
Yes. Yeah.
And the reason why we called is, God, let me see if I can find it. Maybe I'll play it for you, even though we played it on Monday. This would have absolutely, I was thinking of you give me a second here. Guys, say something when I find this audio clip I want to play.
Okay, ready? Something.
Just talk. Yeah. Matt Gaetz gives me here, you gotta hear this.
Hey, Mr. Nikubaka Bakadi Bop. I like it the way that you bakadi bop. I like it the way that you bakadi bop.
Wrong.
That's
clip.
My favorite song.
I got him. Here it is. Here's the clip. Matt Gaetz, Congressman, speaking at a rally. Here we go.
Everybody say orgasm loud.
No, not great.
Oh, no.
Wrong
one.
Here it is. I got it now for real. Here it is. Wait, here it is.
You got to pick a fight or two.
Oh, shoot. Now, wait a minute.
one of them.
Come on, Andy.
One of them.
It's got, here we go. I'm getting close. Here we go. Got it. I found it. This is for real. Okay, so Matt Gaetz is speaking at a rally, all right, and regarding the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. And you won't. Okay. And this prompted us to call his office. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Here we go.
Why is it that the women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions? Nobody wants to impregnate you if you look like a thumb. These people are odious on the inside and out. They're like 5'2", 350 pounds, and they're like, give me my abortions or I'll get up and march and protest. And I'm thinking, march? You look like you got ankles weaker than the legal reasoning behind Roe versus Wade. A few of them need to get up and march. They need to get up and march for like an hour a day, swing those arms, get the blood pumping, maybe mix in a salad.
Wow.
Yeah. That is a United States elected congressman from the state of Florida, Amanda.
Very sad. Unprofessional.
Don't even get me started. Oh, my goodness. That is shocking.
Are you shocked or are you floored? I mean, are you laying down? I mean,
Wow. I could say something. I'm choosing not to right now. I think it would be sensible not to.
Well, you know what?
I think what you just said is very important.
Yeah.
I'm stunned. Honestly, I thought it was a joke to start with. How can someone stand up like that and express those things about people so personally? Attack people like that? What
people
right
who
do
are pro-choice, women who are pro-choice, are 5'2" and fat.
That's disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting. I am disgusted.
So
wow.
We called Matt Gaetz's office.
Wonderful. Okay. How did it go?
And Cornell, how did I do in that phone call?
Did an awesome job. And he was very professional. I was kind of scared, but Andy was very professional. Because I thought Andy was going to go off, but I was like, no, Andy's a professional guy. Let's do it.
Oh, fantastic.
We call, I tactfully told him what I thought of him. I don't want him to come on the show. You know, we invited him on the show.
Republicans love it.
Yeah. Because we wanted him to explain himself. And I think he needs to explain himself.
Yeah.
You know, so I doubt he'll come on the show. I doubt he'll come on. I doubt very much he'll come on.
Yeah. I doubt it too. Wow.
Yeah. He's.
I also happen to call him a lightweight, okay? And I have said that. So I would like to take that back. He's really not that much of a lightweight.
There's only one other individual in government that has shocked me as much as that, and we all know who that is. So,
Wow. Yeah. Unreal.
Who heard that didn't take it so seriously the way he was intending it to be taken, because that's heartbreaking.
He was serious. Yeah. He was, you know. We'll see. We'll follow up on that. We'll see if anybody else talked about it or wrote about it, and we'll pick that up on Friday's show. One thing I think I wanted to touch upon. I know we got to go here in a few minutes, but the Fed in the United States rolled out another 0.75% rate hike. Like if you're looking to buy a house or boat, plane, whatever, finance anything or borrow money, you're about to pay a whole lot more interest. And, you know, and we talked, you know, a couple of shows ago or so about what is the correlation between the Fed raising interest rates on their remedy to somehow damper an inflation and recession. What we got to do, and I was thinking about this, and what we got to do is remember when we first got the pandemic and everybody we locked down around the world, you know, and nobody's doing anything, nobody's buying anything. And the Fed rolled out a series of emergency measures to support the economy, which included reducing interest rates to, I think, close to zero or zero itself, which made it almost, you know, so you can borrow money for free, right?
Yeah.
Well, that easy money policy encouraged spending by households and businesses and, you know, people go out and, you know, wow, I can borrow for free. and buy things, it fueled inflation because what happens when more people are out there buying, manufacturers and distributors do what to the prices? Hey, I'll increase my prices, right?
Yeah.
And that has something to do with contributing to a kind of overheated, overrated economy. But now the economy is no longer in need of that low interest rate from the Fed because, you know, I mean, we still are dealing, as you said earlier, we're dealing with COVID and different variations of COVID and blah, 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 although it's not taking the lives it once did, of course. And people are not wearing masks. That might change, by the way. That's another topic of discussion.
Yeah,
but anyway, but the central bank has been taking steps to remove kind of like that punch bowl, you know, go up, buy, and slow down the economy by hiking interest rates. And I think that's what this is all about. And what we're looking at right now is overnight is changing the federal loan rate from 2.25% to 2.50%, which is the highest it's been since December of 2018.
Right.
And you figure if you go back over about 30 years, right around there, the Fed has influenced its benchmark interest rate up or down by an average of 25 basis points, up and down, you know, about 25 points, preferring to steer the economy at low speed, you know. But, you know, this what's going on now, I mean, around the world, right? Amanda, it's not just here. And that's why
I want to make it clear,
Joe Biden has nothing to do with Cheerios costing more. Nothing to do with it. Nothing. Zero. It is not his. He is not the cause of this. And if Republicans get in, it's not going to magically disappear, folks. You don't believe lies. Don't believe what people are telling you on that side, telling you, oh, Biden is horrible. Oh, look at the economy. Look at what it was under Trump. But anyway, surging inflation really has compelled the central bank, you know, the Federal Reserve, which is independent of Joe Biden, last month to implement a rate hike of three times its normal size, you know, huge, which is the first time they ever did that since like the mid-90s, the first, I think, 94-ish or somewhere around there.
Right.
That's the first time they ever did that, a 75 basis point increase, you know, 0.75%. Woo! But Wednesday's rate hike represents the first time in modern federal history that the central bank has raised interest rates by 75 basis points, you know, 0.75%, twice in a row. That's like huge. So if anybody wants to get a mortgage now, or if anybody has a mortgage based on the prime rate, you know, floating mortgage, holy smokes, are they in for a shock?
Yes.
And the question now is whether the Fed will be able to remove the punch without ending the party, you know, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a balancing act.
For sure. Yeah.
So not, and I'm not, you know, I took some economics courses back in school. I never really went for it. You never really, you know, people come in, the professors come in and draw lines on the board, demand, supply, this, that, and all these curves. I'm like, what are you, an artist? Or are you, what are you doing there? Curves are going all over the place on the boards. And I'm looking at a piece of artwork. Oh, that's very nice. That was pretty. You know. So needless to say, I didn't make it as an economic student. But anyway,
it's good for everybody in the music world because you know you've got less than your stuff.
But the Federal Reserve Chairman, who's a guy by the name of Jerome Powell, has said the biggest risk to the economy now would be to persistent inflation, not an economic downturn. And I agree. So we'll have to see what happens. If hopefully, I see what they do. It makes sense in a way. If you make it harder to borrow money, then you can't spend as much. If you can't spend as much and you reduce what you buy, then manufacturers, distributors, property owners, jet manufacturers, yacht brokers, blah, 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 will have to reduce the prices to entice you to come buy their product.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. You know?
Wow.
So, unless somebody's in a position.
That's the way you're looking at it,
sure. Yeah. And this doesn't just apply here, because what we're experiencing is a global, a frightening global inflation.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Amanda, when you were in Mexico, what was it like there in terms of just going to the store and buying things? Did you see it in Mexico?
Yes, there's definitely inflation in Mexico. There were certain products that went up in price, I noticed, in the short time I was there. And also, the price of an avocado was ridiculous, that people were stopping buying avocados. They were, like, charging several dollars for one avocado.
Same here. Same here.
And it's like, that's crazy. Yeah, when I first got there, you could buy them, and it was a really good price. And then boom, within those 6 months of me being there, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Like, you know, a box of cereal is $6 or so. I mean, you gotta be kidding. I don't eat breakfast cereal anymore, but I'm just, you know, noting going through the aisles. You got to be kidding me. I mean, that's just, you know, everything is up. I mean, everything is up. Debbie Dimples. You ever go to
Debbie Dimples. You know, she gets her own.
She does.
Yes.
I don't know what she's charging these days, but man, it ain't what it used to be. The old good old days, you know what I'm saying? You used to be able to go down. Anyway, no.
I wonder if there is inflation in that department too. Who knows, right?
Wow. But they're trying to negotiate with various parties and bring prices down.
As you know, we're negotiating with the Taliban.
Yeah, he's still doing his thing.
Here you go again, talking about that goddamn Trump. I am so surprised, goddamn shit. What the hell is wrong with the goddamn show? You put me all blind and all that stuff, but I came right through. I'm sitting here driving in my car again.
It grew great with you.
Yes, yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Oh, God. Well, I guess we got to wrap it up, guys.
Oh, time has flown. That's crazy.
Wow. I hate to say goodbye. I hate long goodbyes.
That's so sad. Yeah.
But I think what we'll do is we'll end the show with some hopping, you know, invigorating, exciting.
Yeah.
Get out of your chair and get those dancing shoes on. Some buckwheat Zydeco to finish our show today. But let's get out of here. Cornell, thanks for calling in, man. And we'll try to make Friday's show more interesting for you, I promise. We'll do our best. We're back here Friday, 6 p.m. in New York and 11 p.m. in the UK and 3 p.m. in California, wherever time it is in the world. Remember, please call in, folks. Don't be shy. We know you're out there listening. 515-605-9888. A lot of you listen on a podcast on iHeartRadio and in Spotify and Alexa and Google Chrome and all these different news podcast outlets, so many of them. We thank all those platforms for providing our live radio show on their podcast streams as a podcast. We are produced as a live call-in show, but we do appreciate you listening to the show, whether you listen to us live or later on. Wait a minute. Listen to us live or post to what? Wait a minute. I said that didn't come out right.
Oh, you're so kind.
You know what I'm saying? Whether you're listening to the live show or the recorded show, how's that? That's better.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well done.
Yeah.
Good job. You got that.
Yeah.
Stock alone first.
What are you talking? I don't know. Call her.
Oh.
Open lines. Open lines.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Paula.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's nearly Friday already. This week has flown fast.
The whole summer is just blasting by.
Actually, yes, right. You're right.
Yeah,
absolutely. It really has.
Yeah.
I can't keep up. Seriously, can't keep up. And all this chaos is not helping. Certainly. What is one to do? Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess we should think about scooting out of here and start thinking about Friday's show. Oh, I hear Buckwheat Zydeco in the background. Now let's get out of here, man, and take the subway. We'll see everybody Friday.
Okay, on behalf of my amazing co-host, I'm Kim Hall in California, Hollywood. Myself, Amanda Love here in the UK, and our wonderful, amazing coordinator, Cornell Butler. We love you guys. Thanks for joining us. Join us again on Friday. Great week, and we will see you then. Enjoy the scoot.
You bet, folks. We'll see you now. Take care. Buckwheat Zydeco.
Take care.